Welcome, everybody, to Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Julian McKenzie. There's no Logan Gordon on the show today. Normally, it's him and I who do the Thursday and Friday show. I don't think we even have a Friday show this week, right? Because of the holidays.
Nope.
So I'm running the show for the next 2 hours, solo dolo. It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. Happy opening day to everyone who celebrates. First day of the Toronto Blue Jays season. We're about an hour away from them starting their year off against the Tampa Bay Rays. By the way, Shane Vergie in with me. He's going to hang out for the next 2 hours. Cam Hughes on the ones and twos. Connor's also here. I don't have Connor's last name.
Gronsdahl. Connor Gronsdahl.
Gronsdahl?
Yeah.
So can we go through all the roles of the production people in the studio here? Like, what does everyone do?
I'm still trying to figure out my role.
That's a good question.
Yeah, we don't know.
Okay.
I just do what I'm told.
All right. Yeah. Well, in any case, we are going to be talking Flames. We're going to be talking Blue Jays, specifically with the Flames. We're going to go through what's been said in the locker room earlier today, but also Scott Wheeler, my good buddy at The Athletic. He knows everything about prospects. He's going to be on at 1:30. 2:30, we have Adnan Virk, as we normally do on Thursdays. We'll delve into baseball and other fun stuff with him. And since we're not doing a show on Friday, we're moving Friday DMs to today, Thursday. Thriday? Does Thriday work?
Yeah. If anybody's wondering if we can do this, if this is right, we're doing it.
We're doing it. So if you have any questions for myself, for Shane, for any of us, they could literally be about anything. Text us at 960-960. We're going to take in those questions, and at about 2 o'clock, we're going to get into your DMs. It's the same concept as Friday DMs, where you could text us and ask us anything. You know, what's my favorite ice cream flavor? What's Shane's favorite rapper? Cam? I don't know anything about Cam. Who Connor is? I mean, Connor's still introducing himself to the Calgary Sportsnet 960 audience. Literally ask us anything, and we'll get to that at 2 o'clock. Anyway, the Calgary Flames, they play later on tonight. It's a 6 p.m. puck drop against the St. Louis Blues. They're in St. Louis tonight. Normally, we expect 7, 8, but with the time stuff, they're in Central Time. It's 6 p.m. We've got nothing but Flames content after our show. Flames talk with Steinberg and Logan, the Flames pregame show after that, and then puck drop at 6 o'clock. Keep it locked here at 960. If you've been looking at the standings with the Calgary Flames, 15 points out of a playoff spot, trailing the Vegas Golden Knights. So the St. Louis Blues, they are still very much in the race. They're 6 points out, trailing those same Golden Knights. They definitely need this win. If you're the Flames, though, if you're a Flames fan, there's a section of Flames fans. I said that fast. There is a section of Flames fans who have no problem with the point total that the Flames are at, because they're trying to get that top 10 pick. Shane, where do you stand on Team Tank? Are you a flag-carrying member of Team Tank?
I was up and down all season, as I think many people were, because the Flames were up and down all season.
Yes.
And it was really hard to grasp what was going on. Right now, the Flames have a 0.1% chance of making the playoffs. Now, yes, that's a chance. It's not a good one. So, at this point, you know, losing every game, it's not that that's the desired outcome. And I know that there are so many, that it has so many consequences with losing every single game. Obviously, you're in the position to get a decent draft pick, and one of the best draft picks you've had in a long time. So for the Flames to, you know, lose a few games here down the stretch, I mean, winning or losing against Chicago was tough. Yes, it helps, I guess, in the standings for that. That was a really hard loss. That was something that hurts the team going forward.
That's
going
to lead into my thinking about this, right? Yeah. Like, I get it. Team Tank, you want the high draft pick. I think Matthew Tkachuk's the last top 10 pick this franchise has had over the last, what, 8, 9 years? So, yeah, you definitely want a quality draft pick for this retool. Like, that would go a long way to help Craig Conroy in the efforts. He's already offloaded the pending UFAs. We'll see what happens with Jacob Markstrom. But if he gets himself a top 10 pick, you know, that could help. And when we have Scott Wheeler on, we'll talk a little bit more about the type of players they could get in the top 10 if they stay there. But man, to be in a position where, you know, if you're dedicated and you're trying to watch these games, that is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being a player in that locker room? And that Chicago
especially
game,
the veterans, right?
The veterans, yeah. Right? Like, And I'm telling you, man, like when it gets to this offseason, we're going to be a lot of questions about them too. Like, mm-hmm. do some of these guys want to stay through what this team is going through? This team can't beat Chicago? Like, really?
Yeah.
Well, I think the last time I hosted the show by myself, this was just before they had that embarrassing loss to Chicago. There's just something about Chicago with the Calgary Flames. They just can't get it done.
Well, and I mean, we've talked about it so many times. I hate to bring it up, but they could. With what happened last year, they could have made the playoffs if they beat Chicago the three games that they had against them.
Yep.
So, and it happened again this year. Like you're trying to get a run going, you're trying to get closer to the playoffs in the middle of the season, and you lose to one of the two worst teams in the league. That is demoralizing. And I mean, let's like looking back at a couple of the last few games. If your team tank, your desired outcome is not to lose 8-0.
Nope.
Your desired outcome is for the team to put up a bunch of fight. And what we saw in the Canucks game and the Sabres game, they did. Empty net goals at the end of the game, decent chance. But Chicago, they had nothing going for them. And to see it,
that first
team,
period killed them. The second period, they tried. It just they weren't in it from jump. And then when they tried to get into it, it was too late.
And that's what you can't have when you've got a mixture of veterans and young guys who are still trying to make their way in the league. I mean, yes, Connor Zary's had this great season, and he's proved himself as an NHLer. He still has room to develop, and same with Pospisil and Coronado and Pelletier and all of these young guys. And when you have a team that looks as out of it as they did against Chicago, that's where you make no progress. Sure, you lose a couple games and you get closer to the eighth pick or whatever, but that doesn't help at all.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. It's funny you say it doesn't make progress. I think that loss and a few other wins across the league that ultimately put them in the position where right now, if the draft lottery balls fall their way, they could get a top 10 pick. It's just a matter of figuring out how much further can they actually fall. Seattle and Calgary have the same amount of points. I mean, are you going to find a way to surpass Arizona? I surpass in the opposite sense, of course. They're 6 points behind the Flames. I mean, you're not getting past the Ducks and the Blackhawks and the Sharks.
No, not at all. And I mean, the Coyotes lost like 12 games in a row. It was they had nothing going for them. So
yeah, they had a terrible February. And it looked as if they were going to be a part of that cluster of teams with like a St. Louis and a Minnesota. They're going to fight for a playoff spot. But yeah, Arizona?
They fell off the map completely, like within a span of a week.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how far. I mean, it's weird to say how far they're going to fall, but if it's going to look like what we saw against Chicago, maybe it's going to be that, especially now that they're up against a St. Louis Blues team that needs the wins if they want to keep themselves alive. We are going to hear from Ryan Huska, who spoke earlier today. I will mention this. Dustin Wolf is the projected starter for the Calgary Flames. Appreciate the awoos. You guys like the awoos, the howling for Dustin Wolf?
I just got scared though. Like I you might have saw that.
I was about to say there's no actual wolf that's gonna come.
Why? That's what I thought.
Dustin Wolf starts tonight. Andrew Mangiapane day to day won't be in the lineup tonight. Oliver Shillington, a game time decision. So some really interesting lineup decisions, or not decisions, but some really interesting lineup could be coming for the Calgary Flames, depending on what the deal is with Andrew Mangiapane and with Oliver Shillington, if he cannot go. And it looks as if Jordan Binnington will start for the St. Louis Blues. Anyway, we will hear more now from Ryan Huska.
Maybe just start with, look, a couple of changes out there, obviously missing a couple guys. Is there any update on Mange and Shilly?
Shilly is game time decision. Okay. So we'll see on him this afternoon, and then Mange will be a day-to-day thing.
Gotcha.
So he won't be in the lineup tonight.
Maybe specifically, you know, we've talked a lot about offenses of late, but do you still kind of feel like, you know, chip away at those things that you've described over the work and hopefully get some offense and some results with adversity?
Yeah, I think the type wire, the rope you have to walk when you're kind of in stretches, when you're not scoring, is you can't cheat the game to try to generate offense. And that's something that's important for us to make sure we do it the right way. Because our opponent tonight is a very good transition team. So if we're not doing things the right way, you open yourselves up. And we don't want to do that here tonight. So we want to make sure that we're staying with how we expect our team and ourselves to play. And we feel that when we do it the right way, the chances will be there. And then it's just a matter of finishing.
Rasmus also mentioned, you know, obviously they've been so good on the blue line, helping out with some of that offense throughout the year. I mean, he feels like there might be a little bit more they can support in that way. Is that fair too?
Yeah, to a point. And that goes back to my first comment about they have to make the right decision as to when to get involved. you know, if there's a situation where we can create an opportunity without forcing it. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but we don't want to force anything. And that's the same with joining the rush. If you do it right, the plays are going to come to you. And that's what we want our guys to be aware of tonight.
Kind of more so about making good decisions, I guess, good reads.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you don't have to hope that a play is going to develop and put yourself in a bad spot defensively. And like I said, those are areas that we have to clean up and be better with.
You mentioned that line. I'm always kind of curious, too, about, you know, feeling maybe the pressure to not make mistakes and then also just trying to play free and try to create plays when they're there.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's a good point. I mean, you don't play the game safe. And our issue that we had in Chicago was the connection in the first period wasn't great. And we felt like we gave up too much room. When we do play that connected game, we don't do that. So that's the style that we want to see from us tonight, is where everybody's really doing their job and trusting that the guy beside him is going to do his as well. And I think when we play that way, we're an effective team.
It's been a while since you've seen them. Is there anything you can take away from that last meeting, especially with how tight it was throughout that whole game?
Yeah, well, it's not just the last game. I think this is one of the better transition teams in the league. They play fast, and that's where we go back to our cheating for offense. It's not something that we want to do. So what we're going to look to do is try not to give them a lot off the rush. So it's making sure that we're playing smart with the puck and doing a good job with our detail.
What have you liked from Dustin this most recent call-up?
He's looked composed and confident in the net, and he's given us a chance to win. So we've talked all year long. He's a good goaltender, and he's in a situation now because of Vladdy's injury that he's going to get opportunities to play games, and that's a great thing for him, and it's a great thing for us.
Without Manj, there is a little bit of shuffling that goes up front. Can that provide a little spark, or maybe just a new look allow, you know, maybe something to develop there?
Yeah, and you know, you can look at the last few games. They've been a lot of the same lines, so sure. We haven't got the results that we wanted, so it's an opportunity for us to switch a few things up.
That was Flames head coach Ryan Huska from St. Louis. The Flames and Blues will play each other at 6 o'clock local time here in Calgary. You can listen to that game and Derek Wills, Megan Mickelson right here on Sportsnet 960. As you just heard, Dustin Wolf will get the start tonight for the Calgary Flames. Record of 3-5-1 with a save percentage of .900. Obviously, he's getting more time with Dan Vladar on the shelf with hip surgery. He's done for the season. So we're going to see a tandem of Markstrom and Wolf from here on out. Last week, when I was in with Logan, we were trying to debate, okay, how many games make sense for Dustin Wolf from here on out? Is 5 or 7 the right number? Dustin Wolf getting himself into the game action tonight. What have you made, Shan, and everyone else? Everyone else can hop in on this conversation too, and you could also text in as well at 960-960. What have been your impressions so far of Dustin Wolf hanging out with the big club? We can stretch it out for the last how many weeks, basically since he's been in when he came in relief for that Colorado game.
Well, we all saw what happened with the San Jose game, and that was the game where you started to see he's too small. He's not going to make it in this league.
Which is a stupid narrative.
Right.
We've established that on that show. Like, okay, we get it. Like, he's short, but like, come on.
With that being said, it's not like he's a short goalie that is 29 and has been in the league for a while. He's a short goalie in his first season. So I think that's what's getting overlooked. But it doesn't matter. You have goalies like UC Saros. That's the comparison we always get. So I can't.
It's funny you say you have goalies like. UC Saros is the only other goalie shorter than Dustin Wolf who's played an NHL game this year.
And if you've watched UC Saros, he's pretty good.
He's an athletic goalie.
Yeah. And that's what Wolf is. Wolf can move better than almost every single goaltender in the NHL, period.
Whoa. You think you're ready to say that?
If you watch him, the way that he moves it's special. And I mean, that's just
moves better than
has to, right?
I mean, that has to be his strongest sense. I'm saying that as someone who's not, like my colleague Jesse Granger at The Athletic, who's a big goalie expert. But you think he moves better than anybody else?
Yeah.
In the league?
First of all, I got to make it clear, I'm also not a goalie expert or anywhere close to it.
That's a really big claim.
But I test
it's a real big claim.
If you watch, he is freakishly athletic. He is ridiculously flexible, and when you're a smaller goalie, you have to move well.
You do.
And he does. And I have nothing. I have a lot of faith in Dustin Wolf going forward. And you can look at the Vegas game, the defending Stanley Cup champions. I don't care about who was injured in that game. That's still the defending Cup champs. He was great. And he has been great. And you can talk about the quote unquote bad games he's had. He still has a .900 this year. And for a young goalie in the NHL, that is very promising. And I'm really happy. I mean, okay, let me say this. With Vladar getting injured, No one wished that. No one wants
no
that.
No one wants that. Neither of those goalies, and both of those, both Markstrom, both Wolf went out of their ways to show support for him.
Absolutely. And with that being said, Dustin Wolf now has this opportunity to finally get some consistent time in the NHL. And I don't know what the split's going to be like down the stretch, but him getting this time is super beneficial for him because he's proved everything in every other league. So
but do you feel that with the games that he's played to this point, I mean, actually, you know what? I might have already had the answer with the way that you're talking about him. Mm-hmm. I certainly get the sense that with the games against Vegas, Montreal, Washington coming to mind as well, even though they didn't go his way, but there have been a bunch of games in the last little while where we've seen Dustin Wolf play. I'm getting that sense that because of the fact he's been around the team as long as he has and the way he's performed in those games, your confidence in him is there. Or it's grown even.
My confidence in him is actually mostly because of the confidence he has in himself. Dude. That you know what I mean, right?
Absolutely.
He has full confidence in himself. And I remember early on in the season where he got shelled by Ottawa. And they asked him, I mean, a lot of the goals were not his fault. And he straight up said, as a young rookie goaltender, is like, there's not really a whole lot I can do on a lot of those. And maybe this one, I could have been better.
And that was true. I was at that Ottawa completely. Game. Nikita Zadorov was still on the team. He had a bad turnover. It was like one goal that beat him high, I think. Like, that was not his fault.
No.
That was not his fault. And I think he had gotten called up earlier that week, too. That basically for him, just the fact that like he could just be chilling in the AHL. And then he gets the phone call from Brad Pascal, and he's like, hey, man, pack your stuff. You're going to wherever we're going, and you're going to play with this team. And then you get to the rink, and then you have to find a way to adjust to all these NHL shooters and just get into these games. Like, that is not easy, especially at the earlier point in the season when he was getting games, like, what, once every 2 months? That is not easy.
With like 12 hours notice.
Yeah, so I think that needs to be kept in mind. It's good that he's getting that stretch now. What I will say is this. Before he got the stretch that he's on now, I said, you know what? He still only played a certain amount of games. It's a small sample size. I got to wait until I see a little bit more. So I have to remain consistent on that front. I think he's shown some good things. I think there's been some moments where obviously he needs to get better. But that's fine. He's 22 years old. It takes time before a goalie can reach their full potential. For people who expect a player like Dustin Wolf to be ready out the box is completely unrealistic. And for the Flames, especially in this offseason, they need to figure out what they're going to do to get him more games. He's at that point. So I like him starting against the St. Louis Blues tonight. I like him getting that opportunity. And then we'll see how it goes for the weekend when the Los Angeles Kings are in town. But I like Dustin Wolf getting the start. I like him getting that opportunity. It seems like they might be able to go back and forth. You let Markstrom play against Chicago earlier this week. Why not let Dustin Wolf play? You have nothing else to lose.
Yeah, it's true. And we saw what happened with Mike Markstrom was frustrating against Chicago. That was not just frustration that we saw earlier on the season, like gets, you know, beat by one. That was the Markstrom that we kind of saw a little bit of last year. And he's been the team's MVP this year. I fully stand by it, but there's no point giving him, you know, 80% of the games remaining. There's no point giving him, you know, 8 out of 10 or however many games are left, right?
Man, I got to say this about Jacob Markstrom. And I feel this about a few other players on the team too. Kind of tough that he has the season that he has, and it's ultimately going to be for nothing. Jacob Markstrom rebounded from a terrible 2022-2023. We all know how bad it was. We all remember all the first shots he allowed and all that. He rebounded and played really well, and it's going to be for nothing. Just the team as it is just isn't good enough to put itself in the conversation of the elite or even just as a playoff team right now.
Yeah.
So I feel for him, and I know all those guys in that locker room, they know how important he is to the team. So it sucks to see him go through games like what happened against Chicago, man. Mm-hmm. The team looked out of it. But for him to, considering the performances, the saves he's made, how he's been on high danger chances, I mean, for a good chunk of the year, he's been the best at it. Saving shots against high danger chances. Like, man, I just got to say, I feel for him on that. And who knows what his future is going to be after the season.
And that's what concerns me about the Chicago game is that you've got your guy Markstrom, who's been the MVP all year, and you play like that in front of him. Yeah. That's concerning. So this, I mean, listen, Flames are essentially out of the playoffs. Okay, we all know this.
They're not making the playoffs.
No, they're not. So, but tonight's game is still important. And if you put up the same performance that you did against Chicago tonight, that's where serious concern starts to grow. One game, it can be one game. It can be. But you can't let it go into a stretch of, you know, 2-3, getting towards the end of the season, like, oh, it's time to go home. That's the Flames. I don't care what anyone says. This is an important game tonight.
You know who else I also kind of think of a little bit? Nazem Kadri, because he's having himself a decent year.
He didn't sign up for this.
He didn't sign up for this either. I made a bold prediction at the beginning of the year for The Athletic that Nazem Kadri would have 90 points.
Wow.
It would be like the first time he's ever touched the 90-point plateau.
That is bold.
I mean,
it's not
you guys will see on the weekend, because we're doing a thing at The Athletic where we're revisiting some of the bold predictions we made at the beginning of the year. Mine is not the most off. There's one bold prediction that I'm just going to, I don't know. You know what? I don't know if I'll say it. I don't know if I should
say it. We can read it.
You guys will be able to read it on the weekend. I don't know if I want to tease this, but I'll say this. Nazem Kadri is not going to hit 90 points, but 60 is doing pretty well this year, and he's been one of the team's best players. He also spoke after practice today, so we will hear from him right now. Here on Sportsnet 960.
As a group, veteran-wise, you know, kind of look at this stretch. You know, it's been a little bit tough, but you know, about staying with it. What is it going to look like tonight, mentality-wise?
Just got to get back on track. I think obviously a good start is key tonight in a pretty hostile building. So, you know, they're chasing the spot, and you know, we're going to try to get 2 points tonight.
You know, Razzie said, you know, kind of play like we got nothing to lose right now. Let's just go and kind of play loose, and maybe that confidence comes with it if you're not worried about making mistakes and just get out there and play.
Absolutely. I think the feeling should be a little bit loose, you know, in terms of our system and structure. I think obviously we want to tighten that kind of stuff up and still rely on it. So, I mean, you know, we just got to get everybody on the same page, and I think tonight we're prepared to do that.
Is it fair to say the work's been there, though? I mean, when you look at maybe aside from the first period against Chicago, but you know, a lot of those details, you know, will come. But the work's been there, and it's just about kind of getting some results with it.
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, I think work ethic's never been really an issue. You know, in some games when you're going through dry stretches, you know, a lot of opportunities, you know, we've had that we've missed. You know, lots of posts, and you know. Obviously, when you're hot, those are going in, and when you're cold, they're not. So these are key times in the games where, you know, one goal could really turn the tide in a hockey game, and we just unfortunately have come out on the wrong side of those.
You've been so consistent with that message all season. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of stretch you're in, whether you're hot or maybe cold in some circumstances. But you know, is that kind of where you feel like you get that one, maybe early even, and then it starts to come a little bit more in bunches?
Right. I think just, you know, getting those opportunities obviously is. You know, what we're focusing on, and they're still there. They're there for us. We just got to, you know, whatever it is, bear down a little bit. One to hit the back of the net, and then you start rolling. We've seen this year we're a team that can definitely score in bunches, and that's really hasn't been that big of an issue for us this year. But like I said, when you're cold, you know, it seems like it. You know, these opportunities just don't fall.
Nazem Kadri in the pack of hyenas. Remember when that was a thing?
It was fun while it lasted.
It was fun while it lasted. Anyway, that was Nazem Kadri from the Flames visiting locker room in St. Louis. They play at 6 o'clock tonight. Keep it locked here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan for the call from Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson. We're going to take a break. On the other side of our break, we will be talking to Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. It's time for some draft talk, some prospects talk. Who makes sense for the Calgary Flames if they end up picking in the top 10? And, text us at 960-960 because at 2 o'clock, we are doing Friday DMs on a Thursday. So literally ask us anything, and we will tackle as many questions as we can get to at 2 o'clock.
Can do that, by the way. We can make Friday DMs on Thursday because we decided
it's like Thriday.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's basically what we're going to do.
Yeah.
That's the voice of Shan Virgi. Shout out to Connor and Cam also helping out. My name is Julian McKenzie, and you are listening to Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We back. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This is Sportsnet Today. I'm Julian McKenzie. Logan Gordon will be on Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg, which will be up right after we're done. No Kipper and Bourne. As soon as this show's done, we're going into Flames Talk, then the Flames pregame show, then Flames and Blues at 6 p.m. Not a 7 o'clock start, 6 p.m. here on Sportsnet 960. We are still taking in your questions for our Friday DMs. We don't have a show on Friday, so we're going to take in your questions at the 2 o'clock hour, and they could literally about anything. They could be literally about anything and everything. Isn't that right, Shan?
Like, absolutely anything. We just won't play the ones that we can't.
Yeah. We have to have some decorum with that type of stuff. Anyway, on the phone line right now, good friend from The Athletic, our NHL draft and prospects reporter from The Athletic, Scott Wheeler, on with us here on Sportsnet 960. Scott, how you doing, man?
I am doing well. Jays play their first game of the season. It's opening day in baseball. The sun is shining for a change here in Toronto. I'm excited I know we're hockey journalists, but I'm excited for baseball season here.
I'll say this before we delve into hockey talk here. I'm very excited about baseball season. And as someone who comes from a city that no longer has a baseball team, I'm jealous because you guys in Toronto, you guys can just, you know, go to your ballpark and enjoy the Jays. And I get it, the Jays, you know, we'll see how the expectations go for this season, but at least you guys have a team. I'm very jealous.
Listen, there are a few things I enjoy more from this time of the year, really from April through to September, than getting down to the Rogers Center or the Sky Dome, as it were, and just having a couple of adult beverages and watching a Jays game. It's a pretty special thing, in my opinion.
I can imagine. I also imagine around this time, as we get through to the end of the regular season and the playoffs are going to be upon us very soon, a lot of people who are fans of teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, they're looking at mock drafts. They're looking at where their team is going to be set in Tankathon. I don't know if you use the Tankathon website to figure out to simulate the draft lottery. I know a lot of people in Calgary are definitely going to be using that. Just to start off here, because I know I'm going to ask you a lot of draft questions from a distance. I know I'm in this market. I've covered this enough, but we've seen Craig Conroy accumulate as many assets as possible through some of the trades that he's made, offloading the pending UFAs he's had. What have you made of how the Calgary Flames have set themselves up here for this draft and even for some of the future drafts down the road?
No, there's no question. They've done a really nice job here over the last year, not just to acquire draft picks, but also at last year's draft, I thought between Samuel Hanzik, Etienne Morin, Adar Samayev, who's actually playing right now. Just before I hopped on, I was watching UMass and Denver, who are playing in the first game of the national NCAA ice hockey tournament south of the border here. It's 1-1 at this point. But Sanayev's had a really, really strong year at UMass, has become a focal point for that team. As far as freshmen go, had one of the best freshman seasons in the country, but one of the better freshman seasons in the country. Sanayev's a player that I'm really high on. The trade for Hunter Brustevich, they're well positioned now. They don't maybe have the premium prospect. Like there's no Adam Fantilli, Leo Carlson, Connor Bedard, Matvei Michkov. You watch that BC line, and speaking of NCAA hockey, you watch that BC line of Ryan Leonard, Gabe Perreault, and Will Smith. They don't have that guy. But between Coronado and Zarian, Hanzik and Brustevich, and it's nice to see Jeremy Poirier back now, and yes, all of that. It's the things are trending in the right direction in terms of their pool, and now it's incumbent on them to go find that star guy, go find that sort of A-level prospect that can sort of change the outlook a little bit. And they've certainly acquired enough assets to be able to do that through the draft over the next couple of years.
You have a draft rankings up, but you posted it up on Monday. And you have guys in different tiers. Obviously, Macklin Celebrini in the first tier. He will probably go number one overall this summer. It looks as if the Calgary Flames, if it keeps up for them, they could be drafting in the top 10. And they have not done that since Matthew Tkachuk was taken in 2016. It's maybe a bit of a broad question because we don't know exactly where they could be slotted. It may be on the bottom side of things if they stay in the top 10. But what are some of the quality type of players that the Flames could get if they find themselves in that range?
Well, I think, first of all, if you look at their pool, they're a team that, is, especially at the premium positions, is missing that sort of stud D prospect. And this draft, coincidentally, is the one to, if you're looking for a high-end D, this is the year. This is really the best. In my 11 years doing this, this is the strongest group of defensemen at the top of the draft that I've scouted. You really have to go back to 2012, really, for anything that's comparable. 2012 was obviously the year of Neil Yakupov and Alex Galchenyuk, but it was also the year, and a disappointing, really, one of a historically poor draft in context now. But the strength of that draft was Lindholm and Matt Dumba and Morgan Riley, and it was the D. And this draft is going to be remembered in a similar way. Certainly, Macklin Celebrini is going to be a better first overall pick than Neil Yakupov. But after Celebrini, there are really six defensemen that teams are very high on. I'm higher on five of that group of six, but there are really six for most teams that people are really excited about. And those guys are one or two of those players is going to still be available when they inevitably pick, especially if they're sort of are hovering, if the Flames end up hovering around 10. The premium guys, the Anton Salyevs, the 6 foot seven Russian kid, Artem Lebshunov at Michigan State, who's also about to play this week in the national tournament south of the border. Those guys will be gone. Sam Dickinson of the London Knights will probably also be gone. But you look at the rest of that group of defensemen, Aziv Buyam, for example, who's playing opposite of Adar Sanayev in today's game in the national tournament. Aziv is doing historic things in college hockey right now. He's having the kind of freshman year that even names like Zach Werenski and Charlie McAvoy and Quinn Hughes didn't have. He has 48 points in 38 games heading into today's event. Fans would have got familiar with him if they tuned into the World Juniors. He was probably, as an underager, the third best defenseman on that U.S. World Junior team that won gold. He's a legit star prospect in my book. He's ranked seventh on my list. But he might be there at 10 or 11. And that's the kind of piece that sort of really upgrades where they're at on the blue line. I like Hunter Brustevich a lot. I've got a soft spot for Jeremy Poirier and the offensive tilt that he plays with and the work that he has done to round out his game. I was high on Etienne Morin in advance of last year's draft, but Brustevich and Poirier and Morin, you're hoping that those guys are top six defensemen for you and that they can play in the NHL. Buyam would be a different conversation. You're hoping that he can be a star, that he can run your first power play, that he can be one of the better offensive defensemen in the league. And I also think he defends at a bit of an underrated level as well. I think offensive defensemen are often miscast as just being offensive defensemen, but I actually like the way Buyam defends. So a name like Zane Parekh in Saginaw, who had almost 100 points, one of the most productive seasons in the history of junior hockey in this country, 33 goals, led his team in scoring by 30 points as a defenseman. He's going to play deep into this CHL playoffs and then host the Memorial Cup in Saginaw, who are hosts this year. Parekh is a dynamic sort of comparisons to true offensive defenseman like Erik Karlsson. That's the kind of conversation that people are having about Zane Parekh this year. And so those are the kinds of guys who could still be available in that sort of 8 to 10, 8 to 11 range. And they're impact potential star players. They're special players. Parekh in particular, I think, has a chance to be one of the more exciting players to watch in the NHL for a long, long time. So there are D. If they're looking to add a premium D, that's what's available in this group.
That's a fascinating response. And you went in on some of the guys that the Flames have on defense in terms of Hunter Brustevich and Etienne Morin, who might need a bit more time, but who knows? Jeremy Poirier, who this guy lost a bunch of time, almost lost his hand earlier this year. But they have guys on defense, and they're looking for them to come up. It's funny, I was looking at it, and I thought, well, what about the impact forwards? Because Matthew Coronado's there, Connor Zary's there, this team really needs game breakers. They need guys at the top of the lineup to make it work. And that center depth, right? It was supposed to be a big strength for this team. And now you're looking at Michael Backlund getting older. We were talking about Nazem Kadri earlier, and he's not getting any younger either. And I was curious if the Flames might end up looking for a successor down the line. What about the quality centers in the top half of this draft?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Coronado, Zary, Hanzik, all three of those guys, they may be wingers. And so if you're looking at the other premium position in this draft, what does that look like in terms of the 8 to 10 range? Well, there's probably two players that you'd hone in on. One, WHL fans out in Calgary will already be familiar with in Berkeley Catton. Berkeley Catton is a dynamic skating, high-end skill, high-end skating type of centerman. He's only 5'10", 5'11", but there is a belief among scouts, you talk to them, that he's going to be able to stick as a centerman because of the way he skates. One of the better skaters in the draft, had 110 plus points in the WHL this season, 50 plus goals in the WHL this season, a dynamic talent. Led the league in shorthanded goals as well. I believe he scored 7 or 8 shorthanded goals this season. Just a really, really exciting player who on a Spokane team over the last 2 years that hasn't been particularly strong has had to carry the mail and be the guy. Really, even as a 16-year-old, he was the guy on that team. So Catton's one of the players that would potentially be available in that sort of 9, 10, 11 range if that's where the Flames land. And then the other is Konstantin Hellenius. Again, a smaller center. He's 5'10", 5'11", mm-hmm. maybe 5'11.5" on a good day kind of thing. But extremely intelligent player, extremely talented player, and just plays with his hockey sense and his smarts. He's a competitor for 5'10", 5'11". He's been a center at the Liga level in Finland this year and a very successful one. I actually am working on a story on him right now and got off the phone with Olli Jokinen, who obviously listeners will be familiar with from his storied NHL career. Olli is the coach with Jukurit, who coaches Konstantin Hellenius, and Olli thinks that Konstantin has a chance to play in the NHL next year, which speaks to the belief that his head coach in Liga has in him. He thinks he's one of the best players already at the Liga level as a 17, 18-year-old this season, and he's a big believer that his hockey sense will carry him into the NHL, if not next year, then the year after. So those are really the two guys. They're not bigger guys, kind of both 5'11", very different players. Catton does it with skill and skating. Konsta does it with smarts and know-how, but both sort of high-end players who've been top players. I mean, Konsta, I don't want to devalue his skill because we're talking about a kid who had 30-plus points in a good pro league this year. But two very talented players who have legitimate sort of top six center upside if things break right. So those would be your targets in that range if it's not one of the defensemen.
In conversation with Scott Wheeler from The Athletic here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. This is Sportsnet Today. I'm Julian McKenzie. Logan Gordon is on Flames Talk. You'll hear him after our show is done. I want to pick your brain, Scott, about some individual players. Let me start with one name. You were talking about how there's some names that some of our listeners would be very familiar with. I'm pretty sure they're dialed in on Tish Aginla, who in your latest draft rankings, you have him 15. You kind of have him in that third tier of players. And even in your mailbag, you were asked to make some comparisons between him and his father, Jerome. What can you say about Tish's skill set, and where do you think he ends up in the draft?
I think he's going to be right in that sort of 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, the early teams, maybe 11 or 12 at the high end. If the right team ends up 9 or 10 in the draft order, maybe he sneaks into the top 10. But once you get through the sort of 3 or 4 premium centers, the 2 premium wingers in this draft in Cole Eisman and Ivan Demidov, and those 5 or 6 D that I talked about, he's right at the very front for most teams of that next group. Tidge had a fabulous year, was a depth player on the WHL champion Seattle Thunderbirds a year ago, was actually a healthy scratch at time with that team. It was one of the deepest teams at forward in the history of the WHL for me. Really had 4 lines of drafted NHL prospects, and he was a 16-year-old first-round pick. Was good when he got in Seattle, but needed to play this year and needed to be a star this year. And after a move from Seattle to the Kelowna Rockets, he got to play right at the top of their lineup, and he just took off. Really one of the stories and risers of the draft, 40 goals, 90 points, just an electric player, a very, very high-end skater and shooter, though, and handler, really. Those are really the 3 qualities that leap out. He'll attack you on angles. He'll beat you around corners. He'll put you on your heels. He's got individual skill one-on-one. And then he's got a shot that I've actually talked to him about that reminds me of his dad and of the old snapshots of old. The players these days don't really shoot in a traditional snapshot like we saw Jerome Ginla, Joe Sakic, Brett Hull. Those sort of classic lean into it shots are no more. It's all about changing angles, pulling it into your feet, the Connor Bedard, the Austin Matthews, right? Tidge still has that. He really, really leans into it and snaps it off of his blade more than that sort of curl and drag motion that we see. And he's a lethal, lethal shooter, like just blows pucks past goalies when he gets his look. So really exciting player. It plays hard, but doesn't have that sort of power and presence that his dad had. Like, he's 6 foot and he's strong. not a small kid, but he's not. I mean, people forget that Jerome was one of the meaner players in the league in his heyday and would drop the gloves and all of that. He's not going to be that kind of a player, which I'm often asked about, but plays the game with a ton of skill and speed and can really shoot the puck and score. So Tidge he's an exciting talent. I'm not sure whether he's going to be a first line player in the NHL, but he's the kind of player who projects as a top six scorer and playmaker. And I don't know whether that'll be as a center or as a wing. He's actually listed now by NHL Central Scouting as a center, which I think is a little bit interesting because he only played about 10, 15 games as a centerman in the WHL this year and was mostly a winger. But whether he's a center or a winger, regardless, a very, very talented player that's sort of going to go, once you get out of the top 10, he's not going to linger long.
Okay, what about Carter Yakimchuk, who Calgary fans will obviously know. He plays with the Hitmen in his third season with them, yep. Having a really good season with the Hitmen so far. What about him?
Yeah, Yakimchuk's a really, really interesting player. When I talked about that group of six defensemen and how I liked five of them better than I liked six of them, he's kind of that 6D man for me. He's 12th on my list. But not the kind of player that I would be really excited about taking in the top 10, even though there are teams that view him as a top 10 prospect in this draft. And there's a chance, I think, that he is taken inside the top 10. Teams are drawn to Carter's game because he's 6'3". He's got a cannon of a shot. He's a righty, really strong, physical player. He had over 100 penalty minutes this season. Just checks a lot of pro boxes for teams. Competitor. Tons of skill on the puck, even for 6'3", has some of the better hands in the draft, has made a lot of very, very high-end skill plays as a defenseman in the WHL really over the last two seasons, scored 15-plus goals a year ago, 20, almost 30 goals this year. Just a shot presence from the point kind of reminds people a little bit of Brent Burns, where there's some sloppiness occasionally, but high-end offensive player with some competitive edge and physicality and size, and certainly it doesn't hurt that he's a righty. So the big thing with Yakimchuk and the thing that has kept him out of sort of at the front of that sort of 11, 12, 13 tier and not sort of in my top 10 is his skating. He's got work to do on his feet and his boots and getting a little bit quicker. He can be a little bit slow out there at times when he needs to sort of ramp up. And part of the reason he took so many penalties this season, I think, was just sort of getting caught flat-footed and sticking fractions and that kind of a thing. So Yakimchuk's a very, very talented player. That bomb from the point is going to make him a power play guy at the next level, has ideal size, a lot to like. He's going to be a good NHL defenseman.
Last one for you before we let you go. The Blue Jays and Rays are starting in about 10 minutes, so we got to make sure you get to a couch and watch the game. But what about Cole Yzerman? We've discussed his skill set, and it seems like he has so much offensive potential. The defensive side is a question, and it's just I'm so intrigued by where he's placed on all these different rankings. This is a guy at one point people thought he'd be the definitive number two, or at least he looked as if he could be number two behind Macklin Celebrini in the draft. What are your thoughts on Cole Yzerman as a player?
Cole's a player that I'm still a big believer in. He's fourth on my list at the moment. I would understand a team wanting to pass on him. Like if any number of the players that I have ranked in the few slots behind him were taken in front of him, it's not as if I would be pounding the table or making a sort of firm case for him at the draft table. I think he belongs in that sort of 4 to 8 range. I think there's a chance he goes 9-10. We all know how it plays out at the draft every year. It's the centers and the D go high. The wingers tend to linger. He's a goal scoring, viewed a little bit as a one-dimensional winger. And those guys often just fall when teams prioritize the premium positions. It happens every year. So if he were to slip a little, wouldn't be a huge surprise. There are concerns about his play away from the puck. There are concerns about his decision-making with the puck, shooting into shin pads, turning it over in bad spots, that kind of a thing. He's got a little bit of a body language thing that teams have asked him about, where he's slamming his stick on the bench and throwing water bottles and he gets frustrated with himself. I wrote a feature on him this week at The Athletic that released that sort of really dove into that. He was actually kind of blew me away with how introspective he was. He actually really impressed me and surprised me when I challenged him on some of the ways that he's viewed. He knows the way that people view him. He also believes that he has to play a certain way in order to be successful. And he's bullish on just being himself and playing his game and being himself off the ice. And he considers himself a very emotional and competitive kid and sort of owns that. I think he's going to rub some people the wrong way in the combine interview process. And I think there are other people that he'll probably that will probably really take a shining to as a very intense kid who's very himself. But the goal scoring is elite. Like, he's the best goal scorer in the draft, even ahead of Macklin Celebrini and the Russian kid, Ivan Demidov, and Berkeley Catton, who scored 50. And he's a cut above those guys as a pure scorer. He can score in all sorts of ways. He goes to the net. He can score from out wide. He's got a huge one-timer. He's got a huge wrister. He's got the curl and drag. He'll catch and release. He'll deke. He'll create breakaways for himself. He's flashy with his skill. And then he's also, I think, an underrated competitor. He's not a very good or complete defensive player, but he'll forecheck and he'll finish checks, and he's got some physicality to him and some size and strength and muscle to him as well. So really fascinating player, probably the player to watch on draft day in Vegas in terms of where he goes. Just, is he going to still be a top five guy? Is he going to slip? And then what's that going to look like for the rest of his career? Is he going to have a chip on his shoulder moving forward to try to prove some people wrong? And I think he's the kind of kid that will carry it that way. So I still got a bit of a soft spot for Cole Eisenman. I think he's going to score a lot of goals in the NHL. And as we all know, and as coaches always say, the old cliche, it's the hardest thing to do in the sport, and he does it as well as any prospect in a while.
Scott, appreciate it whenever we're able to chop it up, whether in person or on the radio. You killed it this segment. Thank you so much for your time.
Back at you, buddy. Hope to see you soon.
Likewise, my man. There he goes. Scott Wheeler, the NHL Draft and Prospects reporter. Well, one of, because we have Corey Promen as well. But of course, I love Scott. That's my guy. Thank you so much, Scott, for hanging out with us here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We are still taking in your questions for Friday DMs. Ask us anything. We are going to touch on that at the 2 o'clock hour. You know what else is going to start in the 2 o'clock hour? Toronto Blue Jays season.
Yes, sir.
You just saw them take to the field at the Trop in Tampa Bay. They play against the Rays to start off the 2024 MLB season.
Yeah. First of all, what Scott was saying, there really isn't a whole lot better than getting to that park. I was lucky enough to live in Toronto the last couple years,
yeah,
and probably got to 15 or 20 Jays games. It was, I mean, it's the best. You know, you live close to downtown. You just say, hey guys, let's go to a Jays game in 20 minutes. Like, okay, you go. The Looney Dogs on Tuesdays, and it's a great ballpark to be in. I actually severely miss that right now, and I'm getting that feeling.
Would you have eaten the poutine hot dogs that they had last year?
No, I don't think I.
Yeah, nah.
You know what?
Because I think they look disgusting.
I love.
But there are a lot of Torontonians who stood on business.
Oh, yeah.
With those.
There's a big. Listen, I love just a classic hot dog, and I think it was disrespectful to the hot dog and to poutine as well. I think it was disrespectful to both.
I think so. 960-960, text in your questions for our Friday DMs. It's a combination of Thursday and Friday. You understand what
I'm saying. And we're allowed
to do it. And we are allowed to do it. And that's important. We're going to get to that after our break here. We will also talk to Adnan Virk. Busy day for him, working with the MLB Network, and also has the Cinephile podcast. And we'll find a way to kill time in the last 15 minutes or so of the show, won't we?
We're not killing time. We're giving Blue Jays analysis that's very... I think we're both the two main baseball guys at Sportsnet, and I think this is our time to shine.
Okay, we're killing time. Shan Vergy, that's his voice over there. I'm Julian McKenzie. You are listening to Sportsnet 960 The Fan.